Then we switch to this week's topic, and inshallah we will finish 9:15 if you don't mind, because we are starting a bit late. And we were talking about Barahut last week and the territory of the evil ones. Now we have a couple of hadith here about Barahut. Abu Basir asks Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, qala sa'altuhu an arwah al-mushrikeen. He says, I asked him about the arwah al-mushrikeen. Did we go through this hadith last week? Or we didn't? Yeah. Well, I had actually, it was suggested to write a translation of these. I have written it, but unfortunately it's not on this computer. So I just translate it for you. قال سألت عن أرواح المشركين. I asked Imam As-Sadiq عليه السلام about the souls of the mushrikun. قال في النار يعذبون. They are being tortured in fire. And this is very interesting. يقولون ربنا لا تقم لنا الساعة ولا تنجز لنا ما وعدتنا ولا تلحق آخرنا بأولنا. They say, our Lord, do not set up the hour for us. They are being punished there, they are being tortured, but the window to the future is so gloomy and so bleak that they are in the same time requesting Allah not to set up the hour, not to let the hour come, and do not fulfill what you have promised us in terms of the hell of the hereafter. وَلَا تُلْهِقْ آخِرَنَا بِأَوَّلِنَا. And do not join between our last and our first, because all of them hate each other, as I mentioned. There's another hadith. Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam said, شَرُّ, these traditions are all in Kafi, شَرُّ بِئْرٍ فِي النَّارِ بَرَهُوتٍ الَّذِي فِيهَ أَرْوَاهُ الْكُفَّارِ. It's a very evil well in hell, Barahut. So it's a place in hell. It's not everywhere, of course, in hell. A place in hell which is called Barahut. Alladhi fihi arwahul kuffar. The souls of the kuffar are there. There's a longer hadith. We just skip that to explain a little bit about this territory, because the traditions, of course, give us the outline. We have to find some more details by analyzing these traditions and some other experiences. Now, let's go to Swedenborg's observations, as it falls very well into the outline given to us by A'imma alayhi salam. He says, their faces, this is what he actually mentions that I have observed. I met these people. And these people, of course, are very harmless, although they are very evil. But to us, to him who has not died yet, they were very harmless. To themselves, they are very harmful. To him, they were harmless. They couldn't harm him, actually. He says their faces lack freshness of life, which gives them a scary appearance when they go into this Barahut and they live there. Gradually, the heat, the climate, the tortures, they give them a bleak face. No hope can be seen in those faces. And you heard that when they supplicate, they just say, do not bring the future. What is now is better than what comes in future. And then he says, some faces are scorching black and some are fiery red. Now, these are Swedenborg's observations. It conforms with some of the traditions given to us by the Prophet in Mi'raj, but of course the details differ a little bit. And then he says that some faces are deformed by pimples and rashes to the extent that you feel this face has no flesh, it's just rashes coming out. And some have only bones, and some look like being made of hair. Very hairy on the face. And some faces are only made of teeth. And these go well with the traditions which we have about different people with different qualities how their faces would turn. Of course, he's unaware of those traditions. He just says, what I observed there were these type of people. And their voice and tone invokes hatred and rage, because they are full of rage and hatred themselves. So their tone gradually changes to a tone which always gives the feeling of anger. In some, each is the manifestation of their inner hell, as of course we discussed before. So this is how they live in Barahut. But of course, according to him, this is very interesting, they are not forced to stay there, but they cannot come out of it. This is what he says. He says, as soon as they come out, they feel they cannot live for different reasons. Now he gives some of these reasons. So they cannot come out of this territory, for first, in the darkness of this territory, they see each other as ordinary humans. They do not notice the deformation of the faces. As soon as they come out, because they come into the light of Allah, other people in the middle range, people in paradise, they see them. If they look at them, they see them in this form. But as long as they live in this barahud, they see each other as ordinary people. And that's why they recognize each other, they remember the family ties and all these things. And this area is lit by a charcoal-like light, very, very dim light, in which they just feel the presence of each other. They don't see the true faces. And interestingly, he says, and this is something which is actually approved by lots of our documents, that other territories are lit by the light of God, of which they are blind, because if they come out of this, they don't see anything, because there is light of God, and they are blind to light of God. وَمَنْ كَانَ فِي هَذِهِ أَعْمَى فَهُوَ فِي الْآخِرَةِ أَعْمَى. They are blind, not in the sense that they cannot see physically each other. They can see each other physically, but if they come out of that territory, they don't see anything, because this is light of God. Light of God cannot be seen by them. Their hearts are blind to the light of God. So even if they go to paradise, they do not feel anything. They cannot see anything. And as I said before, they cannot even breathe, because that's not their climate. That's not their environment. It is not made and created for them. So they prefer to remain there. And they find, actually, as I said, their own neighborhoods, the clusters of souls. They find their own neighborhoods. Now, Barahut is divided into two territories. Again, this is what Swedenborg mentions, and incidentally, it happens to exactly fall into our traditions about the different areas of hell, whether it's hell in Barzakh or it's hell in the hereafter. One is the land of gloom, and the other is the land of fire. Now, the land of fire is the worst one. Kalla innaha lava. As we have different levels of hell, for example. Nazza'atan lishawa. This is the fire, the place where it's the territory of fire. The higher territory is territory of gloom and hopelessness. Now, the land of gloom, they are different because the inhabitants are different, actually. The land of gloom is home to those who are influenced by evil. Those who are influenced by evil, surrounded by evil, they cannot come out of, they are entangled by evil. So, if this is the land of gloom, what is the land of fire? Who lives there? The devil, the evil ones. Not those who are influenced by evil, but the very evil themselves, they live there. وَاتَّقُوا النَّارَ الَّتِي وَقُودُهَا النَّاسُ وَالْحِجَارَ. Beware of a fire, the fuel of which are people and idols. Hijara, stones here, means idols. So some people are fuel of the hell. These people who are in land of fire actually are the fuel for the heat in the land of gloom. So they are the source of all evil. Certainly where Shaitan goes, for example, Iblis, is different from where other kuffar would go. It's absolutely a different territory. And only probably very, very few people and jinn will go there where the Iblis is, which is the fuel of the whole hellfire. So the land of fire is home to those who are turned into evil. Because no one is created evil. So people or jinn, they can turn into evil. They can turn into evil or they can be influenced by evil. So accordingly, we have two territories, two main territories. Of course, each of these territories have their own many, many different levels. There is a tradition which tells that hell has seven layers. But since this is regarding the hereafter, we have to discuss it when we talk about the hell in the hereafter. But the barzakh, as we said, is just a shadow of that world. So it's very similar. The things are very similar there. Now, something very interesting. We had not thought of this. Do these people in hell have sexual needs as people in paradise have? They have azwajun mutahara. They have pure wives, pure spouses, azwaj, pure spouses, wives or husbands. These people in hell, do they have sexual needs as well? They should have. Because they have need for food, for drink, as we have both in traditions for barzakh and in ayat of the Quran for hell. وَإِن يَسْتَغِيثُوا يُغَاثُوا بِمَاءٍ كَالْمُحْلِ بِئْسَ الشَّرَابِ. If they ask for water, because they eat a food which almost chokes them, if they ask for water, they are helped with the water which is like molten metal. كَالْمُحْلِ يُغَاثُوا بِمَاءٍ كَالْمُحْلِ, and it scorches the faces and makes the whole food that they have eaten to boil inside their stomachs. So they need food, they need drink, and they have sexual needs as well. So how do they fulfill it? Now, Swedenborg says that some neighborhoods here are filled with brothels, rubbish with blood and excreta. And it's when they want to have this need fulfilled, it's so excruciating and agonizing for them that they hate it, just like when they want to eat food, just when they want to drink. It's so, everything is agonizing. The ni'mah of Allah, because it was not appreciated by them. It is so hard for them there to somehow find that ni'mah easily. Everything is now agonizing. Everything is annoying. Now, when one hears this, one remembers of this ayah in Surah Hadid, أَلَمْ يَعْنِ لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَنْ تَخْشَعَ قُلُوبُهُمْ لِذَكْرِ اللَّهِ. Is this not the time that our hearts should tremble and become humble? If we see by doing evil, this is what we go through. And of course, we go through these not because God wants to punish us, because this is the process by which we can eventually reach purification, going through all these evils to somehow take them away from ourselves. Now, and of course what I mentioned, if this is the hell in barzakh, one cannot imagine what is the hell in hereafter. Of course, in the Quran, Allah has not very much explained the hell in barzakh. It mostly comes in our traditions. However, lots of explanation about hell of akhirah is there, because that is something which these people who live in this situation, they say, Ya Rab, do not make the hour, the time of Qiyamah to come. Because as I said, they know what is the prospect if that time comes. They are happier here than when it is when they are going to go into the hell of hereafter. Okay. Do we have social life in Barzakh? We shouldn't think that just souls live individually there. They are, as I said, they live in clusters, they live in communities, in societies, with relatives. Now, do we need a social order there? Can someone tell me, do we need a social order in Barzakh or in Paradise? At all? Or in hell? Do we need a social order? Why? Who said yes? Yes, why? But if everyone is good, I mean in paradise, if everyone is good, okay, and no one is going to harm others, and no one is going to transgress their rights, so why should we need an order? Authorities, so to speak. Politicians. Oh my God, are the politicians there as well? Yes. No, by social life, of course, we need partner, we need family, we have families there, of course. But by social life, I more mean social order, society, and having leaders, not parties, of course, but no democracy there, of course. Yes. Even the angels have social order. And angels are ma'sumun. They are immaculate. They do not disobey God. Unless in very, very exceptional cases. Put that aside. They do not disobey God. Okay? But they need social order. Now, the reason is, you have people with free will. Okay, you say they have free will, but all of them are good. But their level of understanding, their level of wisdom, and their tastes are different. And therefore, if you have intelligent beings with different understanding and different tastes, then arguments would come up. Then you need law. And there is a law there, of course. There is a law enforced in paradise, and there is a law enforced in Barzakh. So don't think that you are just as soon as you die and go to Barzakh, oh, I'm free of all bonds. And no, you are not free. You are free of evil, inshallah, but not of bonds which you yourself like and love to have those bonds. Now, let's analyze this a little bit. There are ample evidence that the souls in Barzakh live in clusters, i.e. in communities. So they don't live alone, unless if Allah has decreed for a soul to live alone, they have, actually Allah has sentenced the soul to live in a solitary confinement, that is a punishment. Otherwise the souls live together and in communities. And every society, as I said, whose agents have free will on one hand, and differences in taste and understanding and wisdom on the other, is in need of a social order. Therefore, we are in need of social order there. This is evident in the world of angels as well. Now, for example, what do we have in the world of angels? Angel Jibreel has to be obeyed. So, he is the commander. No one can disobey him. This is order. So, you have an order there. And Jibreel has angels under him. He commands them, and they command the lower angels until it comes to tiny little angels, which of course work. For example, all these small angels who bring down the rain and make the flowers to sprout and all these things, they all work for Mikhail, the archangel of rizq of sustenance. He is in charge. And of course, these angels are probably the angels who were called goddesses in the Greek pantheon and mythology, because it has come through a religious understanding that angels are in charge of different things, and then they call them to be goddesses and or gods. Of course, in Greek mythology, because they regarded the angels to be female, so all of them were goddesses rather than gods, except in certain cases. Now, about Jibreel in the Quran, it says, إِنَّهُ لَقَوْلُ رَسُولٍ كَرِيمٍ ذِي قُوَّةٍ عِنْدَ ذِي الْعَرْشِ مَكِينٍ مُطَاءٍ ثَمَّ أَمِينٍ. This is, in truth, the Quran, the word of an honored messenger, that is Jibreel, mighty, established in the presence of the Lord of the throne, one to be obeyed and trustworthy. So Jibreel is to be obeyed. No one can disobey him. Of course, there are four archangels who have their own commands. They do not take command from each other, but they are actually the carriers of the arsh of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Jibreel and Mikael and Israfil and Israel. And there's a very dramatic story for their death, inshallah. We'll cover that probably next week or the week after, how they die, how dramatic it is when these four archangels are to die, when the trumpet is blown. It's very, very interesting. Usually, a number of angels work under the command of a higher angel, who in turn is commanded along with a number of other angels by still higher angels. Now, we have in Surah Safat, وَمَا مِنَّا إِلَّا لَهُ مَقَامٌ مَعْلُومٌ. There is not one of us but has his known position. So this is an order. So, because angels are intelligent beings, and they have differences in their wisdom, and in their knowledge and understanding, and in their tastes, so they need order. And this is what the Quran, of course, alludes to. In Mi'raj, the Prophet saw an angel under whose command were 70,000 angels, each of whom were in charge of 70,000 other angels. So you can see the hosts of angels, the throes of angels, having different commands, taking commands from different members of the community of the angels. And it's very interesting, of course. Very interesting sort of life. Although everyone is pure, immaculate. But you cannot have a sort of messy sort of community of angels. It's much more ordered than human societies. Now, the question is, what constitutes... Now, this is very important, because command needs authority. Now, what constitutes authority in the world of angels is, of course, knowledge, power, closeness to God. That constitutes authority. The angels who are closer, who are wiser, who are more knowledgeable, they have the command. Others work under them. So, when we talk about order and command in Barzakh, what constitutes authority? On what authority some people command over others and would be the leaders, so to speak? Now, if we think about authority in this world, here the authority is always based on force. In society. Of course, in family it's different. It's sometimes based on love, sometimes based on force. But in society it's always based on force. Now, this force is either it stems from military might or from tradition, like for example having kings traditionally, and that gives them authority to have the power and to enforce their authority, or charisma, or will of people, democracy, or political intrigue, everywhere. You find this political intrigue everywhere. So this is what is the source of authority in this world. But these things cannot be source of authority in Barzakh. in paradise of Barzakh. In hell, of course, it's different. In hell, we will come to hell, how the authority works there. But in paradise of Barzakh, this cannot be the source of authority. In the hell, authority is based on might and on intrigue. So you have groups, parties, ummah, as the Quran says, kullama dakhalat ummatun la'anat ukhtaha. Every time a community enters, they curse other communities. Now, these communities are formed based on selfish interests. Now, I have some interests. Someone is more, is mightier than me there. I think that this person is good to somehow fulfill some of my selfish desires with regards to other inhabitants of hell. So I part with him. He is mightier, and he also thinks that I am a good subject actually to help him to enforce his authority. So these communities are formed. They fight with each other. Bloody fights that go on, and sometimes this is so dramatic that angels have to intervene and actually punish those people who by intrigue try to enforce their authority in hell. So forget about it, we are not going to see that at all, inshallah. What about the territory of the close ones, Muqarrabun, and the territory of the pious, Abrar? This is very important. How authority works there. In the territory of the close ones, authority is based on love only. It's nothing else. Because everyone loves God. So everyone loves the one who is a bit closer to God. And therefore, those who are closer to God, naturally, because of that love, they find authority and they are obeyed. So those who are closer are obeyed by everyone. And that's why we say our Prophet, peace be on him, is the head in this Jannatul Muqarrabun, in both in Barzakh and in Paradise. And of course, then we have other prophets, Awliya, Awsiya, all these. Their authority is based on love. Anyone closer to God is loved more and is spontaneously obeyed. And it's rational as well, because anyone who is closer to God is wiser. And therefore everyone knows that whatever he says, although it may be against their taste and understanding, it is wiser, because that comes from a closer quarter with regards to God. In the territory of the pious ones, this authority is more complicated and is based on knowledge and goodness of the soul. So anyone with more knowledge and more good will find authority there. And of course, those who become leaders in this territory of Abrar, the pious ones, they take command from the territory of the close ones. They take command from people there. So it's a hierarchy of command coming down. And it just like works like the territory of angels, like the world of angels. The way the command comes down, yes.
Why are we distinguishing between the close one and the pious one? Surely the more close, the more pious, the less close, the less pious. So this should be a similar thing, not a distinction.
No, the close ones we discussed that are qualitatively different from the pious ones, not quantitatively. They enter they pass a line which makes them completely different, because their worship, as we discussed, is based on love, not on obedience and faith. And this is a very crucial criterion to distinguish the two. The pious ones, their worship is based on faith and obedience, because they don't have that much love for God. The close ones, their worship is based on love. So they are completely different from each other. Their understanding is different. Their wisdom is different. That's why there is this difference here. The more knowledgeable, who have more good in them, are the leaders for their decisions are more in line with the ultimate beauty and good. And that is, of course, what we want in this world. We want leaders who actually lead us to ultimate good and beauty. Unfortunately, we cannot find them always in this world. But in that world, there is no mistake. Because you do not choose the authorities. The authorities are chosen for you. But chosen in a way that you recognize, you realize that this is the leader because he is wiser, or because he is more knowledgeable, or because he has more good in him. Now, look at this hadith. This is stunning, actually. About this hierarchy in paradise. This hadith is reported by Kulayni in Kafi by the Sunni scholar Muttaqi Hindi in Kanzul Ummal, and not only these two, almost every Shi'i or Sunni traditionist have reported this hadith. So it's a very, very famous hadith, not something which is just somewhere in the dark corners of a book. So it says that حملت القرآن ورفاء أهل الجنة والمجتهدون قواد أهل الجنة والأنبياء سادة أهل الجنة. Now this works both for paradise in Akhirah and for paradise in Barzakh. Now the bearers of the knowledge of the Quran, should be they, are the chiefs in paradise. The mujtahidun, whatever it means, we'll discuss what it may mean. The mujtahidun are the leaders of the people of paradise, and the prophets are the heads. They are at the top. So you have this hierarchy. You have chiefs who rule over, say, for example, a neighborhood or a city. And then you have commanders, mujtahidun. Now, mujtahidun are those who struggle for knowledge, for purity. And those who struggle for knowledge and purity, they will be commanders or leaders. And then, of course, the prophets will be at the head. From that paradise of muqarrabun, or close ones, they actually control the chain of command, which comes to the paradise of the pious ones and comes to the middle range. People in the middle range also need order and command. And it comes down. The hierarchy comes down. But you shouldn't think that people who are in the middle range, for example, and they are leaders, they can ever hear a word from the prophets. No. The chain of commands come through different links and mediums to reach them. Now, in his commentary to Usul al-Kafi, Mawla Saleh Mazandarani, this man was a great man, brother-in-law of Allama Majlisi, and of course he was much older than Allama Majlisi, so he was one of his teachers as well. He has a commentary on Usul al-Kafi, Sharh Usul al-Kafi. He mentions that apart from these three groups, other people are commanders and managers according to their different degrees, because naturally, when you have order, you need many, many different mediums and chains. So, this is not something that I or Swedenborg have made up. Swedenborg also talks a lot about this order. But he hasn't heard of this hadith, certainly. He never has heard about this hadith. And we don't have this in Christian theology or books. So, it is something which different experiences, different documents, different sources somehow supports. And this is something which our reason also supports. The only thing that we do not think about these issues is because we think that as soon as we die, we go into a bubble and move from here to there and from there to here in a sort of imaginary world. That's not the case. Of course, that world is much more real than this world, of course. So, we will witness a very organized and stratified community in Barzakh. Insha'Allah. Insha'Allah, of course. If you do not see these things, do not curse me, okay? Now, to obey those in charge not only is not tasking, as sometimes in this world, obedience to higher people of hierarchy is tasking, but is pleasurable, elevating, and enriching. Apart from hell, of course, which is always agonizing, in Barzakh, in paradise, and in the middle range Barzakh, it's always helpful. It enriches you because they get the command from God and it comes down to different people. So the above tradition confirms Swedenborg's observations. He notifies that because the leaders there have utmost love, they wish good for all. And because they excel others in knowledge and wisdom, they know best how to organize the affairs according to the law established by God. Now, let's come to another topic. Children in Barzakh. What happens to them? We talked before about children. That's... What is that? We discussed that. Swedenborg, you just discussed it. Yeah. Now, we said that natural children should not be punished for they have not reached the age to be held responsible of what they do or they say. So, the views about what judgment will be passed on those who die at a young age differ, because some people say, although children should not be held responsible, but of course we have children of kuffar, children of muslimun, children who have, of course, evil inclinations, tendencies, children who have good intentions and tendencies. So the theologians have, of course, argued about this. The Christians theologians, most of them, of course, this is something that Swedenborg in his book slams and criticizes vehemently, and he says all these theologians, Christian theologians, they go to hell. But that's why they don't like him, actually. So he says most Christian, well, not he, most Christian theologians believe that only the children who are baptized will go to paradise, and that's why, of course, in Christian faith, baptism is very, very important. Now, of course, this is a minority, would especially the modern theologians, Christian theologians, give different other views. But this is the mainstream Christianity view of children. A minority of Muslim theologians believe that the children's fate depends on their parents' faith. So if the parents are Muslim, the children would go to paradise accordingly. What if the parents are sinful Muslims? Because they go to hell then. So the children, should they go to hell or not? No. Because the children have no sins, but they are regarded to be Muslims. So, and if they have Christian parents, they are Christians, and if we say Christians would go to hell or Mushrikun would go to hell, they have to go to hell as well. So every Hindu child, every Chinese child, every Western child who is not a Muslim should go to hell because they are bound to go where their parents go. Of course, according to such theologians, every non-Muslim would go to hell. Which, of course, we discussed that this is not the case. Now, the Shia theologians, however, believe that all children will go to paradise. And this is specifically mentioned by Shaykh al-Mufid, that we believe that all children of any faith will go to paradise. Now, compared to the grown-ups, when we say they go to paradise, then the question comes, okay, they haven't done anything good because they are not responsible. Their good even should not be counted because they are not responsible. If their evil is not to be counted, their good is not to be counted as well. So how do they go to paradise? Why should they go to paradise? Of course, don't ask these questions because our mind cannot understand it. This is the quality which I mentioned right in the beginning. that Abu al-Hasan al-Ash'ari actually parted from his Mu'tazili teacher, Abu Ali al-Jubba'i, because of this question, the fate of children. What happens to children? And the question was that he asked him, Shaykhana, a kafir and a mu'min and a child, they die. What is their fate? What is their situation? He said, Al-kafiru ahlul darakat. The kafir would go to hell. Al-mu'min ahlul darajat. The mu'min finds great degrees and grades in heaven. Was-sabiyu ahlul najat. The child is saved. Not ahlul darajat, of course, they cannot attain those darajat, but it's saved. Now he said, what if the child says, my lord, why didn't you allow me to live, to become ahlul darajat, to go higher in these grades, as the mu'min went? He said, well, God may respond very well, that had I given you time, had I given you more life, you may have become a kafir and you would have gone to hell. So I saved you. He said, okay, if this is the case, couldn't the kafir say, why didn't you take me away from a young age so that I don't go to hell? Now, can anyone solve this puzzle? No, of course we cannot solve this puzzle, because this is secret of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Why Allah gives us different ages? I mean, some of us mu'minun, some of them die at 40, some 50, some 60, some 80, some, God forbid, 120, and things like that. And the more they live, they accumulate degrees of paradise. But why? We don't know. This is not something that our wisdom can solve. Anyhow, when we come to children, we don't know why they should die at a young age, but we can analyze what happens to them. Now, compared to the grown-ups, the children who die have one advantage and one disadvantage. Now, the advantage is that they are sinless, because they are not held responsible for what they do, and hence open to any concepts and wisdom that the angels would teach them. They're open, their souls are just like a blank page. The angels can write whatever they want on it. So it's very different if they want to guide a person who has lived a long life, the soul has actually solidified, and they have written lots of rubbish on it. It's very difficult for the angels to wipe it and write new things on it. But for the children, that's not the case. So they have this advantage. They have one disadvantage. They have not developed concepts, feelings, thoughts, which are prerequisite for ultimate wisdom. The interaction that we have in this world and the reaction that we show to different events in this world, which somehow manifests or brings out the qualities of our soul, is something which gives us concepts, wisdom, feeling, and it's on those, based on those things that the angels can guide us. But the children don't have it. So they have one advantage, they have one disadvantage. Hence, they can only be taught to a restricted degree. And this is why Ash'ari Jubba'i, the Mu'tazili teacher, Abu Ali al-Jubba'i, he said that the children are not Ahlul Darajat, but they are Ahlul Najat. They are saved, but they cannot obtain degrees. So, deeper aspects of wisdom cannot be known by them and cannot be taught to them. So they can only grow to a certain state, and they just stop there. And these are the youngsters of paradise, so to speak. They cannot move higher, and they have to stay in a certain space and degree. Their purity is very different from the purity of the grown-ups. Now, compare a child who is sinless and a grown-up who is sinless. You can see the huge difference. It's just like angels and human beings. Angels have no desire and they are sinless. Human beings have desires. If they are sinless, what degree we give them, what mark we give them. So a grown-up which is ma'soom is very different from a child who is ma'soom, because a child didn't have the opportunity to show itself. But a grown-up is certainly very different. For this reason, the children cannot enter the paradise of Barzakh immediately after death. As we said, the grown-ups who are pure, immediately after death they enter the paradise of Barzakh. But the children cannot, they have to be taught. It's a place where you need knowledge to live. So these children to be taught. And it's interesting, in some hadiths we have that the shuhada who are martyred at a very young age, 16, 17, 18 years old, and they haven't acquired any knowledge. The hadith says that Allah will appoint angels to teach them knowledge of God, and therefore they enter the paradise. So this is about the children. They have a sort of interim period in which they are taught that knowledge. They live in a very beautiful interim space under the guidance of the angels to prepare them for entering the paradise. And we have lots of traditions about, for example, some children are raised by Ibrahim alayhi salam. Some children are raised by other angels or prophets. Now, these teachings, the teachings which are given to the children, have two aspects. To teach them the wisdom and knowledge which is prerequisite for entering paradise, this is one. And secondly, to cleanse them from the wrong teachings given to them by their parents or their society, which are hindrances for entering paradise. Say just a teenager of 11 years or 12 years old dies in this society, watching soap operas, going with their parents to different places. There is a foreign personality in these children that should be washed away. So that they, for example, nothing of God is told to them in this society, or in France, so to speak. In France, you are not allowed, of course, to talk about God in any school. It's forbidden. So they know nothing of that. And they are told that there is no God, everything has come through evolution. So these teachings should go out. And then it should be replaced by wisdom and knowledge. So this is what they do. The angels in that interim space, which is a very beautiful, of course, nursery for the little ones, and very beautiful school for the more grown-ups, to teach them these things. After this stage, they will join either to the close ones or to the pious ones according to their inner capacities. So a child may go after this interim period to the Jannatul Muqarrabun. It's possible. According to Swedenborg, again, initially the children's appearance in Barzakh looks like the way they left this world. Now, this is something that we don't have anywhere else. I haven't seen it. This is what Swedenborg mentions. If a baby, infant, dies and the soul leaves, the mithali body is just like an infant. That body goes. But later, their spiritual body grows to the age of a teenager and stops there. Maybe. This is what he says. This is what he says I have observed about the children who die in Barzakh. Questions? Yes. What depends what angels you are talking about. No, not every angel have direct communication with Allah. They also get revelation through different intermediaries. Many of them do not have direct connection with Jibreel, for example. Again, there are intermediaries. Yes.
Or is it that the human being will be governing paradise instead?
Well, each would have their own functions, of course. They have their own function of catering for the world, whether here or in paradise, or in barzakh, or in hereafter. The human society, of course, organizes its own affairs with prophets and awliya and these things. But they are just, again, the workers behind the scene. Of course, there we see them. We see them, we see their work, we see their functions. وَالْمَلَائِكَةُ يَدْخُلُونَ عَلَيْهِمْ مِنْ كُلَّ بَابٍ. From every door, the angels enter, greet them. So we see them, but their function would not go away. They have their own functions. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much for the lecture.
Thank you.
Just looking at the social order, and I understand that there is a continuous process of improvement by increasing their wisdom, no matter which level they're at. Can people actually change the wisdom in relation to other people within that?
You see, the levels will be changed because everyone will grow. But this is comparative. People cannot move to a higher state. And that's why whatever we have made here is eternal for us. The station, the stage. The stage will have its own growth, but of course we cannot reach other stages. I don't think, no, I don't think there will be that aspiration. There's only love for them. There's no aspiration. Everyone is very, very happy and satisfied with where they are.
If you want to end up at that stage there, what can you do here?
Oh, if you want to end up at that stage, you have to base your worship on love rather than on faith. That is the way. That is the way. And that love is created, of course, in some people. It's intrinsically there, like in Jesus Christ or in Amirul Mu'mineen. It's intrinsically there for certain reasons. We don't know the wisdom. But for us, the love would be created after Allah looks at us always doing good. And then He loves us. And as soon as He loves us, we love Him. And then if this love is created, when this love is created, then of course the sort of line between God and the servant would go away. You don't say I and you. It's all Him. And in this way you get to that position. It's possible for human beings. But of course that needs completely taking away all preoccupations of this world, not thinking about. I mean, going through all those commands that the Prophet has given us, tawakkul, sabr, tafweez, total submission to God. These are the things which bring that love to the heart. Yes?
Sheikh, you were mentioning a point where those people who are in the gloom, for example, they keep bring home.
Yeah.
And it's only when they come out of the light that they realize, oh my God, there's something wrong here. Can that be a parable of in this world, where many times we behave in a negative or a vicious way, but think this is perfectly normal, and then we look at it from Allah's point of view,
absolutely, absolutely. That's just a reflection of what we are here, actually. Yes, that's why we need guidance. If we are left to ourselves, we are always in danger. But if we follow the guidance, inshallah, we are saved. Yes. No, in hell, yes, they disobey. In hell, but no, there, when we say laws are enforced, it means that just the authorities tell to people what the laws are, and they follow. It's, as I said, it's a spontaneous. They don't need a police force or something like that. They just have to know what is the order, and this knowledge comes from these people from higher hierarchies. Of course, the activities that we do here, is just play. The real activity, the purposeful activity you will find there, but we don't know what it is. Of course, Swedenborg mentions that people, every person lives there on their jobs and their tasks. They are alive because of that, and every person has a job. But he does not elaborate. And because the Quran says, وَمَا هَذِهِ الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَحْوٌ وَلَعِبٌ وَإِنَّ الدَّارَ الْآخِرَةَ لَحِيَا الْحَيَوَانِ. This world is just play. The real life is there. So the real activity, the real purpose is there. Here all our purposes are void. I mean, if you think about it, whatever we do is purposeless. We think there is a purpose behind. There is no purpose, actually. The world differs, not things related to God. So, yes, the real purpose and activity will be there. Yes.
I think in the Quran, when the verse is described, the angels, it mentions 2, 3, or 4 rings.
Yeah.
Is that the level of angels, or what does it mean?
Inshallah, next week I will allude to the world of angels, because in Barzakh we will see the angels, and we have to know how to actually greet them, how to encounter them, not to be embarrassed. I mean, saying something that they are annoyed, because the angels are very, very sensitive creatures. They get annoyed very easily, of course. But yes, wings may usually the Mu'tazili and the Shi'i exegetes, they say these wings are powers, degrees of power. So an angel who has one wing has certain amount of power, two wings, certain amount of powers. And for Jibreel, for example, the tradition says he has 600 wings. So that's very, very powerful. We can also take wing in military sense, that each angel may be in command of certain wings of an army, throngs of soldiers. So one angel may be in charge of one wing, right wing, left wing, or rear wing. One angel may be in charge of 4 wings, and one angel may be in charge of 600 wings. So we have to let our imagination go into different directions too, and because this is a metaphor. So we have to let our imagination to work in different directions to get the best meaning. Yes. Yeah.
Would it be correct to think that the activity would be knowing the Asma of Allah? Would it be correct to think of that?
Yes. Actually, through every activity, even in this world, we are going through knowing more and more about Asma Allah. And there as well. But I tell you, you will find me, if I come there, inshallah, with you in Paradise of Barzakh, you will find me preaching there. That's the best thing I can do. That's the only thing I know, you see. And you may have other people doing other things, because even there we need preaching. Not preaching in the sense that we change direction, in the sense that we increase our wisdom. And other people may do other things, we don't know. But as I said, the real purpose of activities, we can find it there rather than here. Okay? Inshallah, see you next week with angels.